Blog Talk Radio.
Did you know there's a secret place to expand your mind? A place to escape the same old negative news? Welcome to Colombo Chronicles Live with Rose Colombo, award-winning author, cable TV and radio host, poet, and advocate for justice. Rose has been seen and heard on local and national TV and radio. She's consulted with victims of injustice for more than 20 years. Her articles have been published in major and local newspapers and magazines. Listen live as Rose Colombo welcomes prominent authors and experts to her podcast every Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m. Pacific Time at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles. You can call in and ask questions at 646-564-9742. Follow Rose Colombo every Wednesday from 12 noon to 1 p.m. on Colombo Chronicles Live at blogtalkradio.com/Colombo Chronicles.
Colombo Chronicles Live. Colombo is on their trail. Listen up at Colombo Chronicles Live.
Hi, everyone. This is the Rose, Rose Colombo. Welcome, welcome around the world on Worldwide Radio Podcast. And boy, are there a lot of things going on around the world that are questionable, suspect, and issues of the day, as my former cable TV show and radio shows were entitled, Issues of the Day. I go back a long time on AM, FM radio, and cable television. I may have even created the first reality TV show interviewing victims of legal abuse and bringing on politicians, community leaders, and lawyers to discuss the victim's issue and see if we could come up with any solutions. Well, it appears that the problems have gotten worse, not better. So I guess we didn't have very many great solutions to those problems. But people must try. I think it was Abraham Lincoln who said, we must try, or else how can we succeed if we don't try? Something to that effect, and it's so true. So trying is a huge word that people don't really think about much, but you must try. Whether it's a health issue, whether it's an emotional issue, whether it's an addiction, it could be food, it could be pedophilia, it could be drugs, it could be alcoholism, it could be adultery, it could be anything, because human beings are sinful people, and that's why we have to always do a checks and balances on ourselves, which the government is supposed to do on themselves and the entire government. But apparently checks and balances doesn't even exist today. So that's a real problem, as all three branches of government appear to have morphed into one branch of government in 2009. And bringing it back to full force, where there are three branches of government and not political favoritism, bias and prejudice is going to be a huge task for the American people. Today we have a very dynamic guest. His name is Preston Rendell, and he is a three-time award-winning writer, and he has written for fitness magazines for the last 20 years. He's won many titles as a weightlifter. The magazine includes Muscle Mag International, Planet Muscle, Natural Physique, and his subjects include training, nutritional, historical subjects, interviews, and he has a sense of humor because he's an Italian, of course, and in his articles, so, and his personality. So you're going to enjoy listening to Preston Rendell's interview today on his latest book, Room Full of Killers, and it is an extremely unique and powerful novel of many elements, which include an adrenaline-drenched look at boxing like none other. And so I'll tell you a little more about Preston and his famous book, Room Full of Killers, in just a little while when he joins us on Authors and Experts. The world of authors and experts happens right here every Wednesday, and we have a special guest who is an author or an expert or both. And it can be on a myriad of topics, So most of the shows are archived. You can always come back to blogtalkradio.com/Columbo Chronicles and scroll on down to your favorite author, expert, and topic and listen in at your convenience. You can also read my blogs at Rose for Justice, that's the number 4, roseforjustice.com. And you can read those worldwide. And they are read worldwide. It amazes me how many countries read my blogs on roseforjustice.com. I have a great blog on Uranium One. I have another great blog on The Beast, which are the worldwide computers. And you won't want to miss reading those. And I have another great blog people seem to enjoy, which is China and Costco. And another one that they really seem to is very popular is If the Yellow Fringe Around the Flag is suspending or denying constitutional rights in the USA. So you may want to check out any of those blogs and more. You can almost read about any topic, and it's free. So you can learn, educate yourself, be entertained, and especially if you're sleepless in the big cities and can't sleep at night, forget about turning on social media and read Rose for Justice blogs. Well, they're still free. So what's happening is interesting about toilet water. Everybody was up in arms about toilet water because Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who is a representative and consistently in the news on MSM and online, made some comments about toilet water being provided to the illegals at the U.S. borders who are being detained, men, women, and children, because they came to our borders illegally and they're unidentified, and many have been identified as a majority of males who are members of gangs, cartels, trafficking kids, smuggling illegals into the country for big profits, and have fake families. But because of Obama's loophole he created, which changed detain and deport to detain and release, these people believe and have been told they're entitled to just force their way into the USA. They will get all the freebies. They will be supported for life. So all they have to do is touch down on U.S. soil, and Border Patrol and ICE's hands are tied, and they have to follow Obama's detain and release. Under Obama's detain and release, since 2009 or whenever he implemented it during that time, he released dangerous terrorists, and there were three terrorists, dangerous terrorists, who killed Americans, who actually filled out the forms as asylum seekers. All three got approved, because it's all they ask on the form is, have you ever been linked to a terrorist group, or do you belong to a terrorist group? So I have to mark as no. Who's going to mark yes? Get arrested, right? Okay, so they mark no, and they get approved, and they come on in, right? And so once they're here, who the heck knows they're here, and who the heck knows if they have fake IDs, and who the heck knows where they're located? Because we have, under Obama's regime, no-go zones. And no-go zones is, in my opinion, unconstitutional, illegal, unlawful, and stealing the land of U.S. natural-born citizens who own the USA. This is their homeland. This is their innate and born on this soil, innate to the soil. And therefore, there is nowhere in the Constitution that provides for foreign enemies or foreign friendlies to come into the USA and declare cities to belong to them and deny the right of law enforcement or American citizens or based on their Christian belief, denial to walk in those areas or to exercise freedom of speech in those areas and set up their own police force and call the police on Americans and have Americans detained or arrested. That's a serious problem for Americans that they need to address. So the other issue that I wanted to address today was water, toilet water, because Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez stated that when she went to the borders that the immigrants were being told to drink toilet water. Well, I did some research on toilet water because I like Rush Limbaugh's comments, and I have no problem with his comments, and I always support most of what he says, but I didn't support his comment about the illegals are having a step up from where they came from by drinking toilet water. That I don't find funny, and I find it a problem because I did some research on toilet water. And so I want to ask you to Google toilet water in the state of California and recycling toilet water into tap water and bottled water and know what you're drinking, because it appears that Governor Jerry Brown signed a bill that allowed for toilet water to be recycled in the state of California, and now the Americans may be drinking toilet water. So maybe AOC wasn't so far off. Maybe it wasn't just the fact that she saw the toilets connected to the sinks where the tap water comes out. And maybe that is recycled toilet water. So how many Americans are actually drinking toilet water from their taps in California or other states, thanks to Governor Jerry Brown and Bill Gates, who was involved in this, and also maybe it's happening in Texas too. Maybe it's happening in other states. I think Americans don't do enough research, enough homework, and even I was surprised to read these articles, although I remember hearing rumors about it during Governor Brown's eras, but I didn't really do the research on it. But you can go on my Facebook and you can read these articles, and you can go on Twitter at Rose for Justice, that's the number four, and you can read these articles that toilet water is recycled in California and Americans are drinking toilet water, not just illegals that may be drinking toilet water over in Texas. Maybe the Texans don't know that they might be drinking recycled toilet water as well, and maybe other states, or maybe drinking it out of the bottled water that we purchase at the stores. So this is, maybe AOC isn't so far off after all, and I think that if you read the articles, you're going to do more research and maybe call your representatives and ask them if your tap water is recycled from toilet water. So on that note, we're going to take a break and flush that one down the toilet, that topic for now. And we're going to enter into the world of authors and experts right here on Columbo Chronicles with The Rose right after these important messages.
Howdy, folks. Just stopped in by my favorite restaurant, the Horseshoe Cafe. I highly recommend the home-cooked hot meals and piping hot coffee. In fact, it reminds me of my mom's home cooking when I was growing up. The customer service is excellent. Be sure to save room for the world's best desserts. Make sure you try a slice of fresh homemade pie. The Horseshoe Cafe is located at 154 East 4th Street in the heart of Benson, Arizona. The Horseshoe Cafe is right outside of Tombstone, Sierra Vista, and Tucson. Sometimes Patty and Mike stop by to welcome you. The staff at the Horseshoe Cafe looks forward to seeing you. Stop by to eat or relax. Cool down in the desert with a cold beer or your favorite cocktail. That's the Horseshoe Cafe. Oh, and don't tell anyone I told you, but some people think it's haunted. One thing is for sure, be sure to bring your appetite.
That's right. Be sure to bring your appetite to the Horseshoe Cafe. They have fabulous food and desserts.
Columbo Chronicles Live. Columbo is on their trail. Listen up at Columbo Chronicles Live.
Hi, listen up, because now we're going to enter into the world of authors and experts. And we have an excellent author and expert today. His name is Preston Rendell. He's a three-time award-winning author. His latest hot off-the-press book is Room Full of Killers. And it's just received wonderful, wonderful press releases and featured in very popular news articles. And he's going to talk to us about that. But just to let you know, he's a strong advocate for steroid-free sports. I think that's really important. And would like to think he was a catalyst in the fitness health boom in Massachusetts. He lived in Boston's Italian North End. He trained and boxed out of the New Garden Gym on Friend Street and the University Gym in the South End. He currently resides in Yarmouth Port, Cape Cod, Massachusetts, with his constant companion, Ruth. And he has won he's a three-time award writer. And Roomful of Killers is an extremely unique and powerful novel and has many elements, which include an adrenaline-drenched look at boxing like none other and a white-heat Italian love story. Smoke comes off the pages in both the boxing scenes and the love scenes. So you won't want to miss this interview with our dynamite guest, Preston Rendell. So why don't we just say hello and get started. Hi, Preston Rendell. How are you doing today?
Hi, Rose. Como esta?
Well, you know, I just did a whole, I'm fine, but you know, I just did a whole political little commentary on drinking toilet water, recycled
that.
Toilet water. Is that stunning or what?
Yeah, it's hard to believe.
Yes.
Nothing surprises me anymore.
You know, I thought, well, AOC must really be, you know, losing it, you know. So, you know, and I didn't, you know, I just really just didn't want to believe her, you know, that they would be drinking recycled toilet water at the border. So I did some research, and then I find out that Governor Brown passed a bill to recycle toilet water in California, and it can also be bought in bottled waters, and we don't even know it. And so unless you really do the research on what these politicians are doing, they can really affect our health. And maybe, you know, that's why we're having so many health problems, you know, because of some of the crazy things these politicians do without the American people even having knowledge of it.
It's very true. It's unbelievable. You gotta
and here you are.
Informed and up to date.
Yeah, because here you are, you know, a health expert here. Why don't you tell our audience who don't know what your background is, you know, in the health field and some of the titles you've won?
Well, first of all, I was a skinny kid. I was 87 pounds, not 97 pounds. And I had asthma when I was a kid. I was in an oxygen tent for most of my adolescent years. And I spotted a bodybuilding article in the back of, I think it was a comic book. I ordered a bodybuilding course, gained a lot of weight. And at that particular time, this was the late 50s, when the coaches told you, don't lift weights, you're going to get muscle bound hernias and blah, blah, blah. And it didn't happen. I just got really bigger and really stronger. And in 64, I opened, which was really the first health club in Massachusetts. There was a YMCA in Boston, but they had an exercise room, and it was like 12 by 12 cinder blocks, no window, no air, and it hadn't been cleaned since the Taft administration. So it was awful. So we opened one up in Quincy, Mass., which is about 20 minutes south of Boston, and I went down to Town Hall to get a permit. I explained to the woman we're going to, you know, open up a bunch of equipment, et cetera, and people are going to come in, and they're going to join as a membership, and they're going to, and she laughed at me. She said, people are going to pay you money to go into your building and work out. They're going to pay you money. I said, right. So she called a girlfriend over. I don't forget this, like it happened yesterday. This was in 64. And she said, tell her that. Tell her, my girlfriend. I told her the same thing. They both laughed. They said, here's your permit. I opened up and the place exploded. Mm-hmm. Everybody was mobbed. I had it for about 9 years, and it was 12-hour days. It was just crazy. And we sold it. And at that particular time, I was involved in boxing, and I lived in the North End, which is pretty much based on all of the stories in my book, 95% true. In the meantime, after, 5 or 6, 7 years after that, I opened a second health club on Cape Cod, Preston's Health Spa. The one in Quincy was called President City Health Club. The one in Cape Cod was Preston's Health Spa, which I had about 8 or 9 years. And I got out of the business. I just was burned out. Then I wrote for fitness magazines for 25 years. Wrote for about four magazines, Iron Man, Muscle Mag International, Planet Muscle, and Natural Physique. And I got awarded the Best Writer of Training and Nutrition articles for 3 years. And that was fun. And it kind of died out because the magazines, nobody was buying magazines anymore. After 20 years, everybody was on the computer. The magazines folded. But in the meantime, I'm telling my female friend Ruth about my experiences in the North End, because this happened before I met her, and about the boxing and the mob stuff and all the crooked business. So she says, why don't you write a book about it? She's a retired teacher. I said, that's not a bad idea. I said, what did I think?
Why didn't you think about it?
Yeah. Well, even though I got a
sometimes
few awards,
it takes,
you know,
two.
Yeah. She said, I'm a teacher. She said, you really write well. She said, I thought everybody wrote like that. She said, no. I assumed everybody could do this. She said, no. You wrote very good. So anyway, I hibernated for 2.5 years. 6 to 8 hours a day, and honest to God, I didn't take one day off. It was consumed. And I wrote a book with final was 725 pages. Then I had a friend of mine I grew up with, Karen Schroeder. She was an editor. She edited it. Ruth edited it. And a friend of Ruth, who was another retired teacher, edited it. And we got it down to 535 pages. And it's just going
just
crazy.
Just as many people as are in Congress.
Yeah, right. Right. And won an award in L.A. for Best Fiction, 217. And a couple of months ago, the Globe did an article, a very small article, and they bought me out of books, Boston Globe.
Wow.
And I couldn't believe it. I had about four left. They bought me down to four, something like that. So I had my original printer. He was not available, so I had to get another printer, and it's very tough to get someone to print a book, and a publisher won't be interested in my book because they don't want a book over 300 pages. So my 535 was out of the question. So I had to self publish it. But in the other respect, that I can't think of the name of that woman in England that wrote the. For her first novel was 750 pages or something. What the heck is her name? You know, the one that writes fiction thing with the kids.
The mystery
kids
books?
Kinda, what books?
The mystery books?
No. It's not mystery. They were science fiction kind of.
Oh.
With people flying around and dweebs and drubs.
Oh,
you know.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I know who you're thinking of, but I can't remember her name either.
She was broken. She wrote the first book in a coffee shop, I think. Now she's got more money than the Queen of England. she really does.
Yeah, I'm sure she does.
She's written like five follow up best sellers, and there's been every one of her books has been a movie. And I can't think of her name. But anyway, so that's what I did, and I got this book. Actually, before I wrote this book, when I saw my second health club, I sat down, and I had to get out all of the information about all the craziness in there, so I wrote a book called Health Nuts on Cape Cod, which is selling okay. I'm not promoting that as hard as this Room Full of Killers. Room Full of Killers is a grand slam, you know, and so I'm promoting that one. But in the meantime, I got two books out, and the Room Full of Killers is doing well. I'm just right now. I ran an ad in the Globe about 2 weeks ago, and I'm still getting orders. As of today, I got two more orders, 2, 3, 4, 5 a day. You know, every day. The last time from the one article in the Globe, for two, maybe 3 months, I was getting orders. I said, how can they be still ordering? The thing was 3 months ago, but I'm still getting on. Then Ruth says, I bet people are reading it. Then they're telling their friends this book's good. Why don't you get it? I said, aha. That's probably what it is, you know.
Well, word of mouth is the best, you know. When people like something, they start talking. And, you know,
I'm
who are you going to trust? You always trust your friends.
Yeah, I'm probably going to put an article in the L.A. Times. Sometime in the near future, this summer anyway, if a Room Full of Killers. And see how that goes. That's where they make movies.
So tell us about your main character.
Oh, that's a good one. The main character is Gianni, G-I-A-N-N-I, Valentino Romasco. The reason it's Valentino is because my grandmother was in love with Rudolph Valentino.
I have a cousin named Valentino.
Great name. Anyway, he did his whole life was just the same thing I did. He was skinny, asthma, but he was bullied because of my name. Well, Preston wasn't a bargain, but Gianni was bullied because he was Italian. And he was skinny and blah, blah, blah. And he got into weightlifting and he got transitioned into boxing. Moves into the North End. It's the same thing I did. And when I got into the North End, there was a mob war going on that I had no idea about. Back in the 60s when I lived in the North End, they wouldn't let you move in there unless you're Italian. And that's the truth, you know. And they got away with it. They policed their own thing. They had weren't even cops there. But nobody would dare get out of line.
Right.
And that's the way it was. There was one quick story. It was break-ins all over the place for about a month and a half. And I heard through the grapevine, I guess. It was a 15-year-old kid, and he disappeared. That's the way the North End was, you know?
Yeah. I mean, people don't really realize, you know, that there were actually, young people today probably don't realize that there were actually neighborhoods of different ethnicities. Like, my grandparents lived in an Italian neighborhood. It's not Italian anymore, but it was all Italian back then.
Oh, yeah.
And they'd sit on the porch and they'd talk to each other and nod on the afternoons and da-da-da. So, yeah, so that you know, just to let people know that are younger, that, yes, this is the way it was in those days, right?
Oh, yeah. There's the main street in the North End. It's called Hanover Street. And you can be driving down Hanover Street behind a Cadillac, you know, and the guy will stop, triple parked, Main Street, get out of the car, going to get a haircut. Nobody bothers them. Nobody. amazing stuff. You said, okay, that's fine. I'm not going to say anything to them. I'm not going to blow the horn at them. That's just the way it went. You know?
Yeah.
It was a restaurant back then called Giro's, which I call it's similar to Giro's in my book. Italian cuisine, that's what it's called in the book. There was Cadillacs parked three deep all of the time on the street, from the curb to the next car, then the next car. It was always about 30 cars parked out front. Once a month, they'd find somebody in the car at 6 in the morning, shot dead. And this was up the street from where I lived. Another time, this is a good story. There was a guy called Joseph the Animal Barboza who was going to flip on the mob. And he was going to give names, dates, places, blah, blah, blah. And the FBI had him hidden off an island up in North Massachusetts, a little small island. And I was living in North End. I bumped into a guy, a friend of mine. He said, you live in Prince Street, right? I said, yeah. And he said, they just got Joseph the Animal Barboza and two other guys in an apartment on Prince Street. No. Joseph Barboza is being held on the island. They got two guys in an apartment on Prince Street with 2,500 pounds of dynamite. They were going to blow up the island. And it was right next door to me. It was right next door to me. So,
thank God they caught him or you wouldn't be here.
they didn't play any games in there. Oh,
wow.
This is another thing. I never told you this. I'll put this in my next book. If you went in the North End and you caused trouble, the first thing they would do would sell drugs or whatever, you know. You weren't living a nice life. They would take your car, put it up on the sidewalk and slit all four tires. It would break into your apartment when you were away during the day and trash everything.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and you came home to that. And if you fix it all, they do it again.
Oh, wow. That's pretty scary.
That's what they did.
Were you afraid to live in that type of neighborhood?
No, not at all.
I
knew me, you know, and I was sort of well known after six months to a year in there because I was boxing and everybody knew me and, you know, it didn't give me any trouble. You know?
How did you get involved in boxing?
Actually, I was the Sonny Liston and then it was Cassius Clay, which is Muhammad Ali. They were having a rematch in fight in Boston. So I was bodybuilding and hardcore, and I was about 220 and very big. And there was an article in the Globe about a doctor who examined Sonny Liston. And he said, he's the most physical specimen of person blah, 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 I've ever seen in my life, and they listed his measurements. I said, this guy couldn't be that big. So I went from Framingham to Plymouth, which is about an hour, and I watched him train. It just blew my mind. I couldn't believe this guy. The whole experience is in the prologue in my book, and it's 100% true. Yeah, so I'm looking at it right now. This is what he listed. Listen, now Listen didn't lift weights. Biceps 18, chest 50, calves 18, waist 32, 6'1", 215. And it was unbelievable. And I went to see him in Plymouth, and they charged money.
Yeah.
I think it was $3 a head to go in and watch him train. Everybody, and the odd thing was, everybody that went there was had a jacket and tie, and the women were dressed well, and it was about 80-20, men and women. I couldn't believe it. Everybody was dressed. But seeing him work out was just savage, savage stuff. So then the next day I went to see Cassius Clay train. He was training in Boston. And I went there. There was no charge to get in. And I don't think there was 10 people in the whole place. And Sonny Liston thing, there was like 75 people there, maybe 100. And I went to see Clay train. And there was like maybe eight people. I couldn't believe it. So he just beat Liston for the title. So I stood up right against the ring and watched him train. You know, I was like 5 feet from him watching the whole thing. And he was doing his usual spouting off about how he's the greatest and blah, 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 blah. And he was probably 205. He looked a bit like a basketball player, you know. But he was very, very fast on his feet, which was his strong suit in his whole career. You know, he'd get away from people. And I saw him. I said, they're getting $1 million each to fight. I said, I'm their size. Maybe I should give this a try. And I was a pretty good athlete in high school. You know, I was one state meets in track and in gymnastics. And I was very – and so I said, I'm going to give it a try. So I gave it a try. But as I said, I was winning, doing well, and then the double crosses started happening. And, oh, Jesus. And they wanted to sign with the mob. And I said, I don't want to. You're not going to get a fight, title fight, unless you sign with the mob. And I said, no, thank you. I don't want to get involved. So you're not going to make that kind of money. The guy that ran boxing was, I can say his name, he died about 30 years ago, Sam Silverman. And he paid for a 4-round fight. He gave you $25.
Oh, my
you
God.
Yeah.
No.
And if you had 30 fights, yeah, after he had 30 fights, he would bump you up to the enormous sum of $100 for a 10-round main event.
Oh, my God. That's ridiculous.
Now, he lives in Revere, which is a waterfront ocean community, two Cadillacs, and his house was a palace. He was robbing everybody, you know.
Yeah, he was.
Oh, it was awful. Well, here's a funny story. They shot at him twice through his kitchen window, and they blew up his car once, but they still didn't get him. You know, so I said to my manager, I said, "What's with this guy?" He said, "To my manager, and he told me all the stories about the war stories. This is before I got involved in big time, you know." And then I said, "I can see." So maybe a year and a half or two later, he died. So I went to the funeral to see what was going on, just curious. And it wasn't a funeral, it was like a Jewish memorial thing or something. And every boxer in New England was there. So I went back to my manager. I said, how can he be hated that much? He said, every boxer in New England was there. And my manager said, yeah, they all want to see that he was dead. Make sure he was dead. I said, oh, I get it.
I heard that, you know, that's exactly what the mob does, is they, if there's somebody heavily involved and considered to be, you know, somebody that they don't want around, that they owe money or whatever, they actually go to the funeral to make sure that's the person in the coffin that's dead.
Oh, yeah. Well, you could get somebody out of a homeless person and, you know, make them up and maybe, you know, maybe make them resemble them.
Yeah, and then get the heck out of the country, right?
Yeah. Somewhere. Change your fingerprints and move to the West Coast.
So when you met all these guys and you're like in this situation, like you say in your book, Room Full of Killers, so what was going through your mind? I mean, what have I got into? What am I going to do now? What happened?
Well, yeah, I didn't go into it unattended, if that's a word, because I had a manager who had been through it all and a trainer, you know. And I felt very, very secure with him because he knew everybody, knew all the games they play, et cetera, et cetera. And I was I've always been pretty streetwise. You learn stuff very rapidly, you know. And what to do, what not to do, what to say. But this is the story I'm going to put in my next book. I shouldn't tell you, but it happened. Guy from New Jersey named Frankie DiPaola. He fought for the light heavyweight champion of the world, and he was supposed to go out in the seventh or eighth round. That was at the He's supposed to take a dive in the seventh or eighth round. That's what I heard. He was fighting a guy named Bob Foster, who was a killer. Anyway, he went out in the second round, which was not what he was supposed to do. So about a month later, he took a month off from the gym and stuff. He comes home one night, and there's a sign in his apartment building in New Jersey. He said, wet paint inside the foyer. Please use the rear entrance to go in the apartment building. So he went around to the rear entrance, and he got shot to death.
Oh my gosh.
Would you ever think of anything? Would you ever think about it? That's just up. Would you think anything's wrong? You say, no, they painted the thing. I got to go in the back door. No problem. He went around the back, and they put 10 in them.
Wow, they thought of everything.
Oh, it's stuffed it, you know. Jeez.
Oh,
unbelievable.
So did you keep boxing in your book, or did you just decide to move on?
Say that again, please.
Oh, I said, did you want to stay in boxing, or did you want to get? At one point, did you want to get out, and why?
Well, I would have if things had been different if I was getting money, because $25 was not my idea of a payday, you know.
Yeah,
and,
exactly. Getting your brains knocked out, right?
Well, I was working. Data processing. After I sold my first health club, I went into computers. And this was in the 60s. I went to school for a year and learned computers. And then you don't stop going. But then I wound up the data processing manager for Hertz in Boston. I was stationed in Boston, but I was in charge of Boston, New England, New York, and New Jersey. And it was a very good job. And at night, I always liked to bartend. Because you know what you do when you bartend? You're social, but you're on the other side, and you're making money on the other, and you're on the other side of the bar.
Right.
You know what I mean? You're not on the other side. You're not on the drinking side. You know?
Exactly.
You're on the bartending.
You're listening to everybody else's problems.
Yeah, and you're meeting people.
Right.
Which,
You're like a psychologist, a counselor.
Oh yeah. So I was always doing that, and I always had money. I was working in a place in the North End, and I was making 100. This was back in the 60s. I was making $125.50 a night tips. I said, I'm going to pay $25. $25 for this in the 60s.
Yeah.
Then my regular job, I said, I'm going to be $25 for a four-round fight? Stupid. So anyway, I got out of it because of all that, and it was just a network of worms trying to just horrible connections, and you know, it's nothing to do with talent. It's got everything to do with connections. I did stand-up comedy for a while, and that was probably worse than boxing. People, the stand-up people I met, all eat their young. Absolutely awful.
I think The people who a lot of people who end up famous, you know, and with some do end up with a lot of money, but I think a lot of them have to go through a lot that, you know, isn't told, you know, to the general public, and they don't have knowledge of it, you know.
Selling your soul.
Yeah, selling your soul. Yeah.
Well, I don't know if I should.
At least you were smart
enough
to realize, you know, that you're not going to sell your soul for $25.
No, I got some double cross, a real big one in my book, Room Full of Killers. A guy talked me into doing an exhibition fight in an outdoor place in the summer in Norwood, Mass. And there was four or five fights before me, and I was a heavyweight, so I was the last guy up. And it's all friends, everybody's going to blah, 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 you know, and nobody's going to kill each other. It's just an exhibition, okay. And the referee was a guy named Paul Penda, who was a middleweight champ of the world. And the bell rings for the first round, and this guy comes out throwing atom bombs at me. I said, what the hell is this all about? So we got in a clinch, and I said, is this supposed to be a exhibition, what's going on? He didn't even listen to me. Just boom, boom, boom. So the end of the, somewhere in the middle of the, close to the end of the first round, I knocked him down. So I went back to my corner, and the guy that talked me into this whole thing wasn't in my corner. It was another guy named Carmine. And he was as Italian as lasagna. And big, he's about 5'6", smile ear to ear. Now, don't worry about nothing, kid. Just relax, relax. You know, okay. So it's supposed to be a 3-round fight. So it goes to a 4-round fight. And I said, what's this going on? And then it goes on to a 5th-round fight, in which I even thought was long. And I ran out of gas in the 4th round because it's four rounds with your new kid in the block. I was talking about my 3rd or 4th fight. And it's supposed to be the same for this kid. So I had him really hurt. Actually, in the 4th round, I hurt him real bad. But anyway, went the distance, no decision. So I leave in the place. I mocked up this kid pretty bad. Yeah, I'm quite sure I broke his nose and these other mocks and stuff. And I'm leaving the ring. And my father was there. My brother was there. And I said, what happened to Paul? And this guy's name Paul Stivaletta. And he died too, so I can say his name. He was quite mobbed up. And I said, what happened to Paul? He said, well, we knocked that guy down the 1st round. He went over to his corner. I said, what? I said, I can't believe it. How did that happen? He said, well, we found out that the guy you fought had a 26-0 record, and there was a whole bunch of Boston Globe reporters with cameras there, and I thought, oh, Jesus, good exposure for me, you know? That wasn't why I was there. I was undefeated, too, but I only had about 6 fights. And he said, Paul got the newspaper reporters here, so they want to take a picture of him knocking you out because he was undefeated, and he's about to take his step into the pro division, but he wanted to kick it off by beating you with a big article. He beats undefeated heavyweight. Blah, blah, blah. What? I said, yeah, that's what happened. I said, oh, my father, bullshit. He was going to go after Paul. And so we left. And Paul's pretty much the adversary in the whole book, you know.
Your mother, when she found out that you were going into boxing, wasn't she rather upset about it?
She was okay with it. My grandmother said the rosary. Every time I fought, my grandmother would go in a room and kneel down and say a rosary.
See, that's what saved
story.
You.
Yeah.
That's what saved you. Oh, I believe that.
here's a good one. My grandmother and mother are from Abruzzi, Italy. Well, my grandmother is. And that's where Dean Martin is from, and that's where Rocky Marciano is from. It's a section of Italy, I'm sure you know. And anyway, my grandmother would always say a rosary for me. And it always worked. But one time, there was a fight they put on TV, and my mother never watched the fights. She said, because I'll jump through the screen. I can't have. So she put it on the screen once. She put it on the TV for like 30 seconds, and this guy threw an atom bomb at me, and I got out of the way of it. My mother screamed. This is what I heard later. My grandmother came running out of the bedroom and said, what's the matter? What happened? She said, this guy just threw a big punch, but he got out of the way of it, didn't hit him. So my grandmother said, I'll fix him. She went down to the TV, and she put a Fatu, F-A-T-U, hex, on the screen on this guy. And I knocked him out.
Oh, my God, that is so funny.
Oh, my grandmother,
that's a great story.
Funniest people I ever met in my life. You know,
well, yeah, they're going to fix them.
I fixed him. She said a little bit more. She swore. She very rarely swore, but she swore. She, when she got very, very mad, she would say, son of bitch, a best. And she, you know, she didn't even know how to swear. You know, I fixed him. She put her index finger and little finger at the, pointing at the guy. She said, I give him a fatu into him.
Oh, my God, that's so funny.
I heard that when I got home. Yeah.
So what did you decide to do when from all of this excitement, you know, that you're in and that, you know, would satisfy you? Was it that, was it going into the more health care, or what happened to you?
When I got out of boxing, I stayed with data processing manager Hertz, who was in Boston. I left that. I went to Cape Cod, and I looked around for a health club. And there was one health club on Cape Cod, and I said, "Oh, is this okay?" I went over and looked at it, and it was, they had no equipment at all. I said, "I can't believe this." They said, "The only health club." I said, "There's going to be another one as soon as I find a location." So my friends and family, not all of them, said, "Don't do it. There's one big health club in Cape Cod, and it's been there for years and years. You won't make it." I said, "You want to bet?" So I opened the health club and exploded. I knew how to market it and, you know, advertise it and et cetera, et cetera. And it exploded. And that health club, the first one, it was Dunphy's in Hyannis. They got all brand new equipment to compete with me, and they got a guy with a big background and everything, but he didn't know anything about he had a sports background, but he didn't have a background in weight training and nutrition, you know, which I'm very well versed in, you know. So they didn't bother me at all. People would go there, and they'd work out for a while, and they'd hear all the results of what's going on at my place, and all it did was help me. You know, I had all the people that didn't want to be there anymore, they come over to my place. I had one woman, it's the true story, one woman, she said, she came over and she joined for 3 months. And she said, "I'm just going to join for 3 months and I'm going back to Dunphy's." I said, "Why?" She said, "I want to get information here, but I want to go back to Dunphy's because it's more prestigious."
Oh.
She told
That's
me that.
Nervy. Wow.
Yeah. I said, "Okay, fine, no problem." But it was a country club with a little gym, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Restaurant. I had all the equipment, a pool, saunas, et cetera, et cetera. But I didn't have a restaurant, you know, all that stuff. But I did very well, you know, very well. It just
because you ended up opening three, right?
Spas. Well, I financed one in Maryland. I was a silent partner in a club in Maryland. A friend of mine opened one in Maryland, in Hagerstown, Maryland. And he worked for me in Quincy. Then he moved to Hagerstown, and he wanted to open a club. He didn't have the dough. He didn't have enough money. So I was a silent partner in there. But I didn't have anything really physical to do. I just made some money on it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, did your titles help you? Which titles? Tell our audience which titles you won.
Yeah, I won Mr. East Coast, and I think it was 76. Then I won Mr. USA in 1981. And I came in second to Mr. Universe in 1997 or 8, I can't remember. I think it's 7. And when I won the USA, they did a whole page thing in the Cape Cod Times about me with a full page picture of me, and the other side was the article. I couldn't believe how much they devoted to this thing. My place exploded. Gee.
Well, yeah, and so, but recently too, you just were featured in some major articles. Tell us about that. How did that happen with your book, Room Full of Killers?
Oh, I contacted someone from the Globe, and they wanted to do an article. So I sent him an ad that I made up. I made it up with them, and that's pretty much all it was. And but then if they go to Amazon, I have a full book description and author biography on there, you know. So that's what happened. I think people read it all. Did you see this? This book is exclusively in Boston, which may be the reason why it just exploded, you know. And there's a lot of mentions of names of restaurants that were there in the 60s, you know. If you lived in Boston in the 60s, you're going to see a ton of references in there. A restaurant called Jack Shockey's, Crusher Casey's, the Pioneer Club, the 411 Lounge. Blimstrib's was a very, very hot place. Jimmy Durante used to play there. All the biggies played there. And they're all mentioned in the book. You know, so that's,
yes, and I just want to mention to our audience that the book, Roomful of Killers, is a page-turner. You do not want to put it down. You just want to keep reading and find out what happened next, because the stories are so exciting and they just come off the page, and you did an excellent job. I just want the audience to know that it's a fast read, because you want to continue to read and turn the page so you can know what happens next. And it's always a pleasure to talk to you, Preston, and it's been a while, and I'm so happy for you with your book taking off like it is. You deserve it. And so, especially because you're Italian. You know, and so now's your time to shine, because we have a minute or two here. So you can tell our audience anything you want about yourself and about your book and how to get your book, too, and your social media.
Okay, my book's available on Amazon.com, Roomful of Killers. It is a author biography. Then there's a book description on there. And there's the reviews on there that are unbelievable. Now, I brought something, if you bear with me. There was a guy, after the first book, the first article I did in the Globe, I came home and there was a message on my machine. And I taped it. It's like 10 seconds if you want to hear it.
Good morning, Preston. My name is Jim Piper. You sent my wife Eileen a book, and I just want to say I finished it finally this morning. The Room Full of Killers was just such an excellent book. I wish there were more writers like you out there. It's one of the best I've ever read. Thanks for writing it.
End of message.
Measure that.
Oh, that's fantastic. I mean, seriously, that's a fantastic review right there.
I know it.
Thanks for
it's
playing.
It's unbelievable.
It too.
I was shocked. It made my day.
I know. You know, it's so wonderful when you write a book and people actually respond, and, you know, when they've enjoyed the book, because people don't realize how tedious, I mean, even though it's a love, you know, it's passion and love goes into it, how tedious it is as well, and how much effort and hard work and all the editing and I know
I outline
that when I did my book Fight Back Legal Abuse, that I had an extra 150 pages, and they made me cut it all the way back, you know. So there's all this material that was left out of the book, so I'm doing a second edition. And so, like, you're going to be doing another book as well. So whenever you come out with that book, you know, I want to be the first one to know.
Yeah.
And so do you have any other projects that you're working on, health-wise?
No, so I'm one of those guys that I could do this, that, and the other thing, and left, right, and things on my right and left, but I kind of do tunnel vision, because I can't be what's the old thing about master of a million things, but the master, he does all these things, but he's only master, you got to be a master of one. I can't remember how the saying goes. expert at...
Yeah, multitasking. I think tunnel vision is good if you're concentrating, and it shows that you concentrated on this book, Room Full of Killers, and I hope everyone goes out and gets a copy and goes on your social media as well and says hello and lets you know what, you know, what have their response to your book after they're reading it as well.
Yeah, I'm on Facebook.
Yeah, I know.
I get over 2,000 followers.
That's fantastic. And you'll have more, too, as the book becomes, gets more exposure as well. So over on Cape Cod, hello to everybody, and thanks for listening in to everyone. And thank you, Preston, for being our very special guest. And I encourage everyone to read Room Full of Killers.
Oh, thank you, Rose. It's my pleasure, by all means.
All righty. I'll talk to you again. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Ciao. And Preston Rendell has left the building, and you will want to read Room Full of Killers because it is a page-turner, and you want to read it from front to end. It goes very quickly. And so on that note, we have to say goodbye. Ciao, ciao. See you on or talk to you on Columbo Chronicles next Wednesday from noon to 1 p.m., where we're here for you, and you can listen to any shows that you may have missed or you want to hear again taped live at blogtalkradio.com/Columbo Chronicles. And on that note, I'll say God bless you, God bless America, and be healthy, be happy, and stand up for the good old USA.
Rose Colombo is signing off, and she's left the building. Be sure to bookmark and share Colombo Chronicles Live every Wednesday from 8 to 9 p.m. on the West Coast. Or, if you're sleepless in the big city, that would be 11 to midnight on the East Coast. Rose Colombo says, remember, you're never alone when you tune in every Wednesday to Colombo Chronicles.